May it please the court, good afternoon. My name is Don Trinan, and today I represent myself. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may.
That will be up to you to keep track of. You'll get the yellow light at 5 minutes.
Thank you. Prevailing party. It's important because it dictates a lot of times what cases get brought and what, you know, don't get brought. Creates an incentive for the lawyers to take them. It creates a penalty for defendants that act wrongfully. It essentially puts the English rule in effect when normally the American rule leaves attorney's fees to each party. Legislature uses it to affect its policies. Used it in this case to change the way things are as far as concealed carry permits. The prior regime of, you know, sheriffs all over the state with different requirements, different forms, different standards, that was all swept away, and the legislature wanted to make it clear that the sheriff had to follow the new rules, or if he was wrong, that it was going to cost him. In this case, the district court concluded that the dismissal prevented its review and thus precluded fees. Alternatively, it concluded that a plaintiff can't be a prevailing party when his claim is dismissed. This is tantamount to a requirement for a merits judgment, since particularly in this case, there's only one claim and one type of relief requested, no counterclaims. The only way to win fees is a merits judgment in my favor for the relief requested. First of all, if anyone prevented anything, it was the sheriff. A case that's moot has to be dismissed, and it doesn't matter who asked for it. The court has to dismiss it because it loses jurisdiction. In this case, there's only one remedy, and that's the providing of the permit. There wasn't a damage claim. There couldn't have been under the review statute. So when the sheriff came up with the permit, that was the end of the case, and there was nothing else for anybody to do. And the fact that I made the suggestion to the court and asked for dismissal, that certainly shouldn't be held against me. I'm an officer of the court, saved everybody time, and saved the sheriff additional attorney's fees. The issue is the right to prevailing party fees and capitulation-induced moot actions. Which brings us to the judicial imprimatur versus the catalyst doctrines. First off, Colorado law has never required a favorable merits judgment in order to be a prevailing party. Al Henshaw and Denny Renson got their costs in the 2004 Archer case when they had a judgment against them. And Richard Purcell got his fees and costs in the 2000 Anderson Purcell case with no judgment. Both cases without any mention of the Supreme Court's decision in Buchanan in 2001. They would not have gotten their costs and fees and costs if the Buchanan rule was followed in Colorado, the 5-4 majority rule. Now, Buchanan, the advantages, well, it's easy to apply. You don't have a merits judgment, you don't get any fees. And, you know, that's easy, but it's not just. It comes at the expense of a just result often, and the expense of tying the judge's hands. I mean, the judge may have, you know, feelings about, you know, under the facts of the case and under the way things really play out, who prevailed, but if there's this bright line rule, no judgment, no fees, his hands are tied and he's not able to do justice. And all the Colorado cases talk about, you know, letting the judge have discretion in these kinds of things, at least as long as he follows the legal choices that are within his purview.
Mr. Trinan, let me ask you about that point. As you noted, whatever discretion the judge have toward fees would have to be within the confines of the statute. And the statute here seems to condition imposition of fees upon completion of the court's review. Doesn't that suggest a required merits judgment?
No, because that's the legislature, that, you know, they're you know, citizen legislators, and the language that they choose is is not something that's scripted out like it might be in a congressional kind of thing where everybody's got lawyers advising them as to what the precise language means and whether something's a term of art. Completion of review, in my view, is just completion of the case. That's the way it's used in many other statutes that give fees, and there's no requirement that there's no reason for the legislature to require that a district judge actually eyeball the record. I mean, that doesn't make sense. I mean, why? What would there be about this that, you know, makes it actually require him to actually put his eyes on what happened in order to give fees, particularly where the defendant capitulates? It simply doesn't allow for that, and so it should be considered as being completion of the case.
Well, tell me if I've got the chronology correct, because I may not have.
Sure.
You made a filing with the court acknowledging the case was moot, correct?
Yes, sir.
The second, the case is dismissed, correct?
Yes.
Third, in a matter of days after that, you request attorney fees?
Yes.
Now, I mean, had you requested fees in connection with the advisement to the court that the case might be moot, wouldn't that have afforded the court an opportunity to review the record as it existed at that time and make a fee determination before dismissing the case?
Well, when I filed the suggestion with the court, I made clear that it was subject to my ability to proceed with a fee application. That's in the pleading that was filed.
Okay, I apologize. I misunderstood.
It's in there. It wouldn't have mattered. I would have belt and suspenders because under Baldwin, you know, they're separate, and you don't have to. The fact that a case has to be dismissed, it has to be dismissed, but that doesn't prejudice a later fee and cost motion. So it wouldn't have mattered if I told them what I wanted them to do later or not. But in this case, I certainly did. So. This business about prevailing party and judicial imprimatur and who prevails, in Buckhannon they used the Black's definition. It's strange that the Supreme Court would, you know, proceed to a Black's Law Dictionary to say a judgment means something that is handed down by the court, but in common parlance, prevailing party means did you get what you came to get? People sue for results, not docket entries. Here, the catalyst rule, while perhaps requiring the court to do a little more work, promotes the intent of the statute by making illegally denied applicants whole and induces the sheriffs to follow the rules.
But Mr. Trinan, doesn't that require us to assume that the reason why the sheriff issued the permit was the lawsuit, and there's any record on that? I mean, they had 90 days to make a decision, right, which had not expired by the time we filed the lawsuit. So they could have eventually issued the permit regardless of the lawsuit. They were not given enough time to do that, as I understand the record.
Well, they had 90 days to deal with the application, but they dealt with it on the day it was filed. They denied it.
But doesn't the statute require a written denial?
No, that statute is for my benefit. It's not for the sheriff's. The statute allows 90 days and no more to keep the sheriff from sitting on applications indefinitely. But where the sheriff says, you're out, there's nothing in the statute that says that an oral denial is not permitted. And in this case, when the sheriff's designee tore up the application and said it's denied, there was certainly no reason for me to think if I just went home and waited 90 days, he'd change his mind. The statute is what changed his mind. And the cases say that, you know, when the chronology is indicative that the lawsuit induced the change in conduct, that's what's required for the catalyst rule. In this case, the district court judgment makes the statute fee provision an illusion because it allows the sheriff to escape a fee obligation any time before the court's judgment, no matter how egregious the initial denial. It also keeps applicants from getting counsel. Because if somebody comes into my office and says, well, I was illegally denied, will you take my case, but you have to count on the fee provision to get paid, I can look at the facts, and the better case he has, the less chance I'll get paid because the sheriff can always change his mind before that stamp comes down on the review. And that's not right. Here.
But Mr. Trinan, couldn't plaintiffs in this scenario avoid this unnecessary litigation by just waiting for the 90 days to expire and then filing the lawsuit? Because then they would have a final decision from the sheriff.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you don't have a, you might have a final decision, you might not. You violated the statute in not approving the application to start with. You shouldn't have two bites. I mean, if he denies it, he denies it. You know, if he had done nothing, we'd have a different case. But here, he said, get up. He said he didn't ask for 90 days, and he didn't, you know, he tore it up, and he said, it's denied. I should be able to rely on that. I'll use the rest of my time rebuttal. Thank you.
You can run the podium down if you wish. There's a switch kind of by your right hand.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Tiffany Blue. I'm here on behalf of Sheriff David Walter. I'm an assistant county attorney for Arapahoe County. I think Mr. Trinan, based on his statements and based on his filings, wants the court to ignore the actual language of the statute. We start with the American rule. Parties are responsible for their own attorney's fees unless a statute provides to the contrary. Here we have a statute that provides to the contrary if you meet a certain prerequisite, and that is that the court complete a review.
Well, let me stop you there. Is from your view of the record, is Mr. Trinan correct that his advisement to the district court concerning probable mootness specifically reserved his right to seek fees?
That is my understanding.
Okay, if and, you know, we'll look at the record on our own, but, mm-hmm. but if that's correct, why wasn't it incumbent on the lower court at that time to review the record and address the fee issue, as opposed to what apparently happened is dismissing the case and then after the fact deny the fee application because the case had been dismissed?
Your Honor, I don't think the trial court denied the fee application because the court had been dismissed. I think the trial court denied the fee application because the court was not able to complete the review required by the statute.
Well, in your mind, what does complete the review mean if the relief sought has already occurred? I mean, you're not going to presumably call witnesses and have an evidentiary hearing.
Well, and that is true, Your Honor. And in this case, we absolutely have no evidence in the record for the court to have reviewed at that point because the case was so brief.
But whose fault is that?
I would argue that based on the statute, which gives the sheriff 90 days to deny a permit, that the 90 days wasn't even up before Mr. Trinan filed his case. So I would argue that it is in part Mr. Trinan's fault and maybe perhaps the sheriff's fault, but we don't know. There's nothing in the record to show that the sheriff had to give Mr. Trinan the permit because of the lawsuit. We don't have that background. So, and the county's position is that the language of the statute is pretty clear about what's required for review, notwithstanding any other provision of the law to the contrary, at a judicial review sought pursuant to this section, which is what Mr. Trinan was doing, the sheriff shall have the burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence that the applicant or permittee is ineligible to possess a permit under the criteria listed in section 1812.2.3.1, or if the denial, suspension, or revocation was based on the sheriff's determination that the person would be a danger, as provided in section 1812.2.3.2, the sheriff shall have the burden of proving the determination by clear and convincing evidence. Following completion of the review, the court may award attorney's fees to the prevailing party.
As a practical matter, if the sheriff has granted the permit, has advised Mr. Trinan that the case is now moot, and Mr. Trinan does, I think, consistent with his duty as an officer of the court, tell the court, that's right, the case is probably moot. How can a review occur
It can't.
Okay, so you're, so does your argument boil down to the fact that if, forgetting about the Buckhannon test, you know, the motivating factor, if the sheriff grants a permit after litigation has been filed, the fee application will always fail because there's no record for the court to review?
I think if there's some sort of settlement agreement that the court has approved or some other judicial action, then perhaps you could say that some review has occurred. But I still think that the language of the statute is so specific as to the type of review required, and the legislature made it that way on purpose.
Have you looked at the legislative history?
I have not looked at the legislative history because, honestly, I think this is extremely clear as to what the legislature intended. I think the law in Colorado is clear that we have to, the court has to interpret fee-shifting statutes narrowly, that the court has to give credence to every word in the statute, and that to disregard everything in this section simply because there's an argument that it should have been written differently is inappropriate.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just gonna ask you to respond to your opponent's point that completion of review under the statute was functionally equivalent to completion of the case. Why shouldn't we assume the legislature had that intention?
Because I think the language of that section in particular specifically is a rejection of Mr. Trinan's point on that, because of these steps that it lists. The sheriff has the preponderance of the burden of proof by a preponderance of the evidence or clear and convincing evidence. They're clearly stating this is what we need, and that language following completion of the review, which is what's described in that section. I don't think you get to, you can just call it something different. You can call the review something different.
Okay, why, you know, if the lower court had before it Mr. Trinan's request for fees, why wouldn't the proper course by the lower court, rather than dismissing the case, say, we will have a hearing at the end of which I will be in a position to conduct my review, and then I will rule on the fees?
Because at that point the case was moot. There was no reason to have a hearing.
But I mean, where's the chicken and where's the egg here? The sheriff moots the case by issuing the permit. Then the sheriff turns around and says, because the case is moot, you can't get your fees. Well, I guess there's an intervening step. Then the sheriff says, because the case is moot, there's no review. And then the sheriff says, and because there's no review, you can't get your fees.
And I think that's correct, but that is based on the statute as written by the legislature. If the legislature wanted to allow this sort of argument about the catalyst theory and prevailing party, they could do it.
Well, let's set the catalyst theory aside, because I think the statutory interpretation may be simpler. Why should we read the statute as allowing the sheriff to moot a case by his own affirmative conduct and then use mootness to defeat an attorney fee application?
Because you're, I have to go back to the statute, because I think that's what the statute provides for. If we did not want to, if the legislature didn't want to allow that to occur, the legislature could avoid that by not being this specific in the statute. But the legislature didn't do that. So again, the American
Blue,
rule says, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead and finish your answer.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, the American rule says, if there's language in the statute that provides differently, then we get to parties not being responsible for their own attorney's fees. The language in the statute basically says, unless you get to this point in the case, you're not entitled to attorney's fees. So neither party is entitled to attorney's fees.
So your interpretation of the statute is, unless a merits judgment enters, the American rule controls.
I believe so. And I would point out that prevailing party could be the sheriff. If the sheriff had proceeded with this case and prevailed, he would have been entitled to attorney's fees. So it's not a automatic win for an applicant, it can go either way.
Well, it can't go either way after the sheriff has issued the permit.
No, but the language of the statute, basically. If you get to that merits judgment, it could go either way in terms of who receives the attorney's fees.
I apologize, I may have cut off your question.
No, it was related. I was wondering how important or not is the fact that to your argument, the sheriff issued the permit within 90 days. In other words, would you have a different argument if the sheriff had waited 100 days to issue the permit?
I think it's important in the sense that we don't know what the motivation was for issuing the permit. There's nothing in the record that explains why the permit was issued when it was. We don't know if the sheriff would have issued the permit anyway. All we have is Mr. Trinan's affidavit stating that he feels he was denied on the date that he applied, and that's it. Those are the only facts.
But under the statute, doesn't the statute require a denial within 90 days? And if there isn't one, that's an objective fact. Isn't that a violation of the statute?
It would be a violation of the statute.
So would your argument be different if we had such a violation of the statute about whether there could be attorney's fees?
Well, I think if there's a violation of the statute, you probably would get to the point where you would have a judgment by the court.
Well, not necessarily.
I guess.
Okay. Suppose the sheriff has a 90-day grace period to do nothing, to rip the application up and throw it in Mr. Trinan's face or something in between. On day 90, nothing definitive has happened. Mr. Trinan sues on day 91, and on day 92, the sheriff says, okay, here's your permit, go away. Is at that point Mr. Trinan deprived of his opportunity to seek fees for the cost incurred in filing the action?
I suppose it's possible that he would be pursuing his case under a different provision at that point.
What's the difference?
Wasn't the argument being that you violated the same statute? You should have given me a permit based on these criteria within this amount of time. You didn't, for whatever reason. You violated the statute. I win, given my fees. Wouldn't that be a proper argument for him to make at that point?
I think it's possible that that's a proper argument. Again, I haven't really looked at that particular avenue, but the language of this particular statute is the one that I feel is controlling in this case. And it may be that there's a different provision that would apply if it had been more than 90 days. The fact is it wasn't more than 90 days. It was approximately 3 days within 7 days that the case was filed. So,
right. So let me ask this. we're at day 92 under this hypothetical. In the statute, would the sheriff have authority to then issue a permit?
I honestly couldn't say. I believe he would.
Let's assume.
But I haven't looked at that specific language.
Well, let's assume he denied the permit on, we'll call that day one. He ripped up the application. That's the final decision of the sheriff at 90 days. Is that correct?
Oh, are you saying that because the sheriff?
Well, then.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm.
Mr. Trinan then files a lawsuit on day 91, and then the next day the sheriff comes along and says, "Oh, here is the permit. I've changed my mind."
With regard to the concealed carry permit statute, I believe my argument would be that the language of this particular section that refers to attorney's fees, and again, I haven't looked at that other requirement as specifically, I guess I would say that he wouldn't be allowed attorney's fees, that the sheriff wouldn't be allowed attorney's fees, and the applicant wouldn't be allowed attorney's fees.
Let me take it a step further then. forget about day 90, 91, 92. Mr. Trinan being sued, the case goes through discovery, is set for trial, and on the eve of trial, the sheriff hand delivers Mr. Trinan's permit and says, "You as an officer of the court now have to agree that the case is moot." Does that mean that Mr. Trinan doesn't get any of his fees incurred all through that discovery process?
I think that's a difficult question, but I think the language of the statute is that you don't. Unless the court can say, "I completed some sort of review."
Okay, but why, I understand your argument, but why can't that review be of the record as it exists when the court disposes of the case. I mean, suppose, for example, we're in between the what really happened here and the full trial on the merits. Mr. Trinan files an affidavit. A few weeks goes by. He files a motion for summary judgment. The court said, then in the face of the summary judgment, the sheriff coughs up the permit. No fees?
I think that's different. I think that would, if the court is granting a motion for summary judgment, I think the court could say, I've completed a review.
Okay, so...
Because he has, they have looked at the merits and they have looked at the burden of proof.
Okay, but if the summary judgment was pending and not yet ruled on, and the sheriff voluntarily gives the permit, then no fees?
Not if the court hasn't completed a review, no.
Okay, so you're saying that you're interpreting the statute as saying unless the court renders a merits judgment, there cannot be a successful fee application.
That is what I believe to be the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you want to run the podium back up.
Thank you. I think it's important to understand that I already had a permit. This was a renewal. And if you get into the issues about 90 days and denials, typically, constitutionally, if I have a property right and a permit, which I did in this case, he has to come and get it. And he has to take it away from me. And because I have a property interest in it, he has to show that I shouldn't have it anymore.
Well, forgive my relative ignorance of how this works, but is your permit subject to an expiration date?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's why you're essentially reapplying.
That's right. Under the statute, every 5 years, you have to renew it.
So your property right would be limited by the expiration date on the license, wouldn't it?
Right. I mean, it after they tore up the application, I'm in a situation where in a number of days, I'm going to be walking around without a permit. So, that's where you are. 90 days certainly would, either butt it up against it or take it past it, because you can go in on the last day of your 5 years and apply for it. But if they don't process it and they don't give it to you, then they can take the position that it's no good. And the way these things work is they have a process on the same day. You go in, you stand in line, you get your picture taken, so on and so forth, and they hand it to you right then and there. In this case, that whole process was derailed by what happened, and it was essentially denied. And this business about them saying that all they have is my affidavit about what happened, this and that, if they want to deny that they denied the permit, when I filed the motion for attorney's fees, I asked for an evidentiary hearing. I said these people are getting slippery on whether it was denied or not, and whether it was denied because I didn't wait 90 days. So I asked for a hearing, and the court ignored that. And went right to the business of dismissal.
Your request for a hearing was after the case had been dismissed, or in the notice of mootness?
It was in connection with the fee motion. Okay. Because that was what was at issue. I mean, it doesn't matter what I would have said about fees or anything else. The case would have still been dismissed, and I'm still able to move for fees after that. There's lots of cases that say that, and I made it clear I was going to do that. My suggestion. The business about the completion of review, it shouldn't prevent the interpretation of the statute from being when the case ends, however it ends, because that's when the district judge's review or his ability to review ends, and it shouldn't be different than any of the other statutes. I've never seen this in any other statute, and I looked. It just appears to be the way they decided it. No doubt the legislature would be very surprised to find out that this kind of result, this kind of position would be possible.
Have you looked at the legislative history?
No, I took a quick stab at it, but it was a very daunting kind of thing with long audio tapes and dingy rooms. It would have been very difficult, and I didn't.
Understood.
But the fact of the matter is the whole purpose of this statute is to tie down the sheriff and make him act in conformance with a very tightly worded statute. And if he strays, to penalize him. If he's able to do that here, he can deny permits for no reason at all, put a guy through litigation. There's not going to be discovery or anything. It's an administrative review. But he can put him through all that, and then on the eve of having to issue the permit because a judgment would issue, he comes up with the permit and leaves the applicant with no fee remedy. That's just not a reasonable, that does not affect the intention of the legislature. The sheriff also indicates that in their brief that even if, no matter what, the court could have not awarded fees because the statute says may. But as the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Piggy Park case, which has been adopted by a number of Colorado cases, may means should, unless there's a good reason not to. And certainly that didn't happen in this case. The court simply didn't look at the merits at all. Didn't have an evidentiary hearing to determine whether the chronology requirement was met and so on. So I see my time is up, but thank you very much.
Well, we appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. We will issue a written opinion in due course.